Welcome to DevelopLex, a Middle Tech production hosted by me, Weston Lockhart, Ross Bogus, and Evan Knowles. This series will focus on the ins and outs of real estate development and investing, where we'll have the opportunity to sit down with developers of our cities, veterans of the industry, and key people that have over time made a massive impact on communities and neighborhoods. The purpose of this series is to be able to bring a knowledge base to our audience beyond that of what reading a book or watching a how-to video ever could, and educate from those who have done it by hearing their stories, both good and bad, along the way. We feel that historically the learnings of real estate have been inaccessible without being connected, and we would love to open the doors to the next generation of doers, as well as shine a light on how visions of community have been brought to life. We hope you enjoy. This episode is brought to you by Bank of the Bluegrass. It's easy to preach about being a community bank without actually operating that way, but I can attest as a real customer of Bank of the Bluegrass that they are truly in the community and for the community. Whether it's closing a real estate transaction that needs some creativity, troubleshooting an issue where you need a real person on the other end of the phone, or just the simple fact that when you walk in the door, your banker knows your name, Bank of the Bluegrass has you covered. Plain and simple, the best bank in town. Bank of the Bluegrass, member FDIC. NMLS 421548, Equal Housing Lender. DevelopLex is sponsored by SV and Stone Commercial Real Estate, a full-service commercial real estate firm located in Lexington, Kentucky, affiliated with the SVN International Network, which is comprised of over 1,600 advisors and staff and 200-plus offices across the globe. The SVN Stone team consists of experienced commercial real estate advisors in the heart of the Bluegrass. SVN provides commercial real estate services to large corporations, middle market businesses, and individual entrepreneurial investors. Serving the greater Lexington area, SVN offers advisory services for sales, leasing, management, and development of commercial properties locally, regionally, and nationally. With transaction volume of over $400 million, the advisors at SVN Stone Commercial Real Estate have vast experience and deep understanding of all aspects of commercial real estate.
Craftsman Contractors is Central Kentucky's one-stop shop for roofing, windows, siding, and gutters. CraftsmanContractors.com/contact us will get you straight to the form you need so that their team will get in touch about your project. Or just text Steven at 859-246-0108. When they finish your project of windows, siding, gutters, or roofing, you'll see what they mean when they say we build with integrity.
Welcome back to DevelopLex. We are in the Awesome Inc. studio today, me and Ross, that is, with Bryce Anderson. I've known Bryce for a while and have really been interested in kind of all the things he has going on. We told him we were going to ask him exactly what he does day to day at some point, and that's probably going to be a long-winded answer because I think he does a lot, but I'll let him kind of get into his background and get to where he is today. But Bryce, welcome on.
Thanks so much for having me.
So let's get into where you're from, education, all that kind of stuff, and then we'll kind of wrap back to where you're at today.
So I grew up in Lexington, Kentucky, went to Lexington Christian for high school, and actually work with two guys that I went to high school with still. So I see them every day. And then after high school, I went to school in Pennsylvania and kind of thought, this was the last time I'm going to do something in Lexington. I'm out. I'm going to go to a big city, and I kind of live that life. But then I came back. And so I did undergrad in Pennsylvania, then did grad school, and then worked in DC at an IT consulting company for about 3.5 years doing SAP implementations and traveled a lot. And then one of my business partners, Jeremiah, he had seen this self-serve frozen yogurt concept on the West Coast. And so he convinced Evan and I to come back to Kentucky, quit our jobs, and open an ice cream shop, which my parents thought was an ice cream truck. And they were really disappointed that I was going to quit my IT consulting job after getting a master's to open an ice cream truck with my high school friends.
So I can only imagine. That's funny. And what was the name of the...
So Orange Leaf Frozen Yogurt was our concept. And so we opened our first location in October 2010.
Okay. That's funny. I remember when I was younger, we went, a lot of my family lives in Birmingham, and there was a yogurt mountain down there. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if my mom listens to this podcast or not, but I still remember she said she wanted to open a yogurt mountain in Lexington. I was like, Mom, that is not going to work. But clearly it did. And that's probably why I should not be in your side of the business. So how do you describe yourself today when someone asks what you do?
Sometimes I say I work at Vinaigrette. Because a lot of people in Lexington know what vinaigrette is, and that's just like an easy, tangible answer. Our company, we say, is a family entertainment and restaurant conglomerate. And so we have two restaurants underneath our group, Orange Leaf Frozen Yogurt. We still have one location here in Lexington. And then we have Vinaigrette Salad Kitchen, which we have 8 locations throughout Lexington, Louisville, and Cincinnati. And that's kind of our restaurant wing. Then our entertainment side is Breakout Games, which is an escape room company, and then Activate Games, which is an active gaming family entertainment facility.
Gotcha. And so obviously that's, you got a lot of different irons in the fire. How do you come up with these ideas? Like, are these organic kind of things? Are you very proactive in studying concepts or?
Oh man. So I think each of them has their own origin story. We can get into how we did that. I think I really like the tangible aspects of these physical locations that are serving a lot of customers. So we're not looking for 100 customers a year that we have a lot of revenue off those. We're looking to have millions of people come to our concepts, and we're trying to just reach as many people as possible with also having a lot of employees. And so we enjoy the really tangible nature of that, especially in this world that's so digital, on your phones, isolated. We think all of our concepts actually bring people together, and that's really fun.
Yeah. And just to give just a background on this episode a little bit, obviously some of the other guests we've had have been a little bit more real estate intensive. Bryce does own real estate, obviously, and is in that space every day. But we did think it would be neat because there is a portion of owning real estate that there's a tenant and there's a reason to go to a building. I'm sure you guys own some of your locations for some of these things, but just as a background, that's part of the reason we're doing Bryce is he is very, very experienced in being a tenant of commercial real estate as well and all of the facets that go into that. Yeah, let's get into just one of the more prominent ones and we can kind of go company by company, but let's talk about Vinaigrette for a little bit. How was that idea born? Because that's a very local central brand that most people in Lexington will know.
Yeah, so we started Vinaigrette in 2014 is when we opened our first location. But in 2013, we began kind of looking at the local foods movement. And Kentucky has a great history from 400 years ago of being this special place that especially the Native Americans who lived in this central U.S. area, they all agreed to that none of them would own Kentucky, that they would be a mutual hunting ground because it was such a sacred place that had great land and great animals. And I think like we have a history of a special place for agriculture that probably with the tobacco has changed, but I think we're maybe getting back to that. But we just began reading about that, learning about that, and so on to kind of be a part of bringing Kentucky back to this place of being a wonderful agricultural center. And we thought a great way would be to help combine some of the local farmers that are doing some great things and the people in Lexington who just don't have an easy way to access local foods. So we thought the busiest place in central Kentucky is the mall. And so we opened a kiosk in the mall next to the Coach store and where the little helicopter guy flies the helicopters. And so we opened a kiosk there. And we're like, we're going to sell fresh tomatoes and blueberries and fruits and vegetables to people in the mall. And it was terrible. No one wanted it. No one wanted to carry a bag of tomatoes after they just went to Gap or wherever. And so we had that for 6 weeks and then shut it down.
Was that also called Vinaigrette?
That was actually called, so one of the, our first LLC is called the Grove LLC. And that's what that business was called, the Grove. And so we made a really simple logo. I don't even know if we had a website. And that was our first foray into this kind of this food movement. I mean, we did frozen yogurt before, but that's not as food-based really because sure. We're making our own product. And but that failure actually led us to meet a lot of people. And the main one is Weta Michael, who is a chef in town. And she just was a great friend. And so we had this idea of, in that Grove concept, we were trying to take a tomato and then sell a tomato and then trying to add some margin on top so that we could be profitable. But we weren't like adding much value to this tomato except making it maybe a little more accessible. And it turns out no one even wanted to buy it in a mall. But we wondered if we could create a salad or a combination of these different fruits and vegetables and oils and sugars and salts, there might be margin there. And we're actually adding value by creating a complex flavor that actually tastes good and is good for you. But none of us were chefs. And so I went to Weta and said, Weta, would you make our first menu for Vinaigrette? And so she did. So she actually helped us found Vinaigrette and just was really a great teammate to work with. And we just paid her a little consulting fee, but she was super helpful. I was really surprised because she essentially helped us create a competitor concept to what she's doing. But since then, we've invested in some of her businesses, and she's been a great partner with us. But that was our first location. And we didn't know if anyone in Kentucky would want to eat salads for lunch. Like, is that even going to work? Kentucky is like the 48th least healthy state in the country. So we took an orange leaf, the one on Townley Road over by Leestown and New Circle, and we cut it in half, put up a wall, and made half of it still orange leaf and the other half a vinaigrette just to see if it would work.
Yeah.
So that was our first location in August 2014. And since then, we've grown about, I guess, one per year on average. But usually it's like two a year and then take a break for 2 years and then another two. So we opened two more this past summer in Louisville.
Wow. Okay. There's a few things I want to get into off that. I think that's what's so amazing too, though, and I forgot to say it as I kind of talked about why we wanted to have you on, was like I called you an expert retailer before we went on here. You are very invested in retail real estate, and you understand retail, but a part of that story is that you tried something and it failed. Have you just tried a bunch of different things in your career that have failed? And is that kind of how you're crafting some of these ideas, or is that kind of a one-off for Vinaigrette?
No, we've tried a lot of things that have failed. I think finding what someone's team is really good at is really important. And we think something that we're really good at is trying something quickly. And then if it isn't working, stop it. And if it's working, scale it. And I think that's like our team's core competency. There's a lot of things we're not great at, but we think we're pretty good at that. And so Activate, which I don't know, have you guys played Activate? It's over in Hamburg.
I did Breakout at some point.
You did Breakout, yeah.
Yeah.
And so we had a concept that was kind of like Activate that we launched in 2019 called Color Chaos.
Also did that one.
Did you do Color Chaos where you got shot with paint? We thought that was kind of a new take on a location-based, interesting entertainment idea that could bring families together that's maybe a little more physical, high-tech, and that just didn't work that well. We tried to get it up really quickly. We created the rooms, created the experience. And after running that for a year, we realized this is not something that's going to scale. We really couldn't get people to come back. It was a one-time play. And once someone had done it once, it didn't seem worth to come back. Yeah. So that was another one that we tried it quickly. It didn't really work, but it led us to finding Activate. And so Activate is based in Canada. We're the U.S. licensee. But it made us realize when we saw that concept, how great a job they had done, because we had tried to create something that ended up being, you know, another location-based entertainment thing. So it led us to finding Activate, and it actually, our team learned some of the skills that allowed us to implement Activate. And so I think that's happened a lot for us, is to try things, it fails, but it's the first iteration fails, but it leads you to finding another iteration that actually is successful.
Well, I'm fascinated how y'all are able to pivot so quickly with family of brands, just using FitUp as an example for your Townley Place, that leases are a hard thing to break out of.
Yep.
but to be able to pivot like that is a really cool way to use the fail fast model and do.
I would say that's something too that I feel like many of the successful people that we've had on this podcast have had is, and I don't ever know if I have this skill or not, is that like threshold of knowing when something needs to be altered or changed or when it's just going to not work altogether, which clearly you have that. What do you think is a determinant of when you're going to scale something or when you're going to axe it and go back to the drawing board? Or is it just kind of a feel thing?
I mean, I think it's like if something's growing, then it has a chance of scaling. If it's growing slow, then you give it more time before you scale. If it goes really fast, then you scale quickly. So our Breakout, we opened end of 2014, and it did pretty well. And then we opened Louisville in May of 2015, and that crushed it. And so that was Breakout Games. And once that crushed it, we were like, we have something special here, so let's go. So then we ended up opening 10 locations in 2015. I think it was 23 locations in 2016, another 17 in 2017. So we scaled really fast once Breakout started taking off immediately. But at the beginning, it was a little slower, so we didn't pour the gas on the fire.
Sure.
What is it when you're looking at scaling? What's your checklist that you're looking for in a suburban commercialized district? Or how do you do site selection? How do you do launch? How do you do everything
through
that?
I think we're still learning that. So a big, you know, a big core competency for us is that you ship it fast. We want to get something to market really fast. So we actually don't own much of our real estate. We've owned some and then sold some, but overall we lease almost everything because it's so much faster. And we think us owning real estate, that's valuable, but that's not something we're uniquely good at or our team is especially good at. And it takes a ton more cash. We'd rather have 5 locations in 5 different cities than own the real estate and have 1 location in 1 city.
Yeah.
So demographics is big. We want, you know, high density and high incomes are 2 big things, but we're learning, especially in other cities, how do you find a spot that works? Because if someone looks in Lexington, I would probably know like, hey, this is a good area. This is not. Hamburg's a really great area in Lexington. All the best restaurant demographics are in Hamburg, but some people look and they may want to be on Nicholasville Road, which are also pretty good, but the demographics compared to Hamburg aren't as good.
Absolutely.
But someone who's new to town doesn't know that. And so that's what we're trying to figure out. So usually we'll have a local broker in a local market help us. And Gordy's done a great job. Gordy kind of helps us facilitate that with White Oak.
Yeah. Yeah, Gordy Hoke, one shout out. Nicest guy in Lexington.
I've
said.
Agreed.
Time and time again, Gordy might be the nicest guy I've met. That's cool. Do you, for your concepts, there's a couple of things I wanted to get into, but for your concepts, when you're looking at sites, are the demographics for like Vinaigrette, Activate, are those similar? Or are you guys having to kind of figure that out as you go and they're a little bit different?
Yeah, I think with food concepts, you can be a little more localized because someone can come to Vinaigrette 3 times a week. With the entertainment concepts, you're hoping they come, you know, maybe twice, 4 times a year. And some people can come more than that, but overall, it's a lot less frequent. And so you can be in a great neighborhood in Vinaigrette and have a lot of good households or be... I think on the great street corner is really important for Vinaigrette because people are driving by and they're making instantaneous decisions. Do I go buy this salad today or do something else? With our entertainment concepts, it's more of a proactive, what should we do this Friday night? And so I think we're learning, you know, we're still trying to figure this out, but I think the general location matters a ton, but you maybe don't have to be
Main and Main.
You might maybe we should be on Main and Main, especially for Activate, which is the one we're growing now. But that's something we're trying to figure out.
Gotcha.
But I think for Vinaigrette, it matters a lot. If you're back off the street in the back of a center where people can't see you that well, that's probably not where we want to go, even if the demographics are good.
Sure.
Are you looking to start or scale your real estate portfolio in Central Kentucky? Check out Rapid Fire Investments. They find off-market, discounted real estate deals just for you, so you can save time and maximize profits. From single-family homes to multifamily apartments, no matter what your investment goals are, Rapid Fire can help you reach them. Sign up for their email list today and get notified when new properties become available. Just go to rapidfireinvestments.com. That's rapidfireinvestments.com.
Okay, that brings me to my next question and really just getting into an overall scope of retail, because you obviously are very involved in retail. You've been doing this for a while. How has it changed? Have things for your concept in particular changed pretty substantially since you've been in the business? And yeah, I would say that would be the first question is how has retail changed since you guys have opened some of your concepts?
So in 2010, we opened our first Orange Leaf. And at that point, Amazon was part of the landscape, but they weren't nearly as dominant. Now, when we're thinking about a new concept, our first question is, will we have to compete with Amazon in this concept? Hmm. And I think that matters a ton for retail. If someone has a concept that Amazon might get into someday, you probably just don't want to do that because you just cannot compete with them. And so we think that in the restaurant space and in the location-based entertainment space, that's something that Amazon isn't going to go to. So we feel comfortable engaging in those businesses.
Sure.
And there's some businesses that do a great job of selling things that Amazon sells, but that seems like to us too big of a risk to potentially compete with them.
Yeah. And then the other two obvious things I think of when I think of just Activate and just Vinaigrette is I feel like every food place wants to have a drive-thru at this point. Is that something that you guys are interested in?
Yeah, you're right. I think drive-thru is really important. We have one location that has a drive-thru, but because everyone wants a drive-through, it's very difficult to find a drive-through space. And a lot of times it needs to be a build-to-suit, which is really expensive, and national people maybe just want national tenants. So that's been harder for us to find a drive-through. And we've looked a lot of times in a lot of cities, but we've only been able to find one. Actually, and it was only our first, that first one I told you about where we split Orange Leaf, that's the one we have a drive-through because we got the landlord to add a drive-through to that building, which we ended up turning into a full vinaigrette. Yeah. So we actually haven't bought us or rented a space that had a pre-existing drive-through before.
Well, it's interesting too, and this might get into retail nitty-gritty a little bit too much, but people assume that you're going to, like, we work with some fast food concepts or drive-through concepts. Like, landlords assume oftentimes that that's going to just absolutely boost sale. Like, anything that has a drive-through is going to do twice as much. I don't know if that's always the case or not, especially when you think of, like, a salad concept where, you know, it's a fresh, it's an experience.
So. Yep. Yeah, I think, I mean, huge in the restaurant world, labor has become a huge issue in the last 2 years. And so running a fast casual with a drive-through is more labor and is harder. So I think it'll be interesting how that plays out. Because, I mean, I went through a Wendy's, I guess it was 6 months ago, and it took half an hour to go through the drive-thru.
Oh, my gosh.
And I ended up ordering, waiting for half an hour, and then I just left. I was like, I can't wait. I was on a road trip. And that's crazy. But that's the kind of stuff we're seeing because of labor shortages, especially in the food market where, you know, people don't really want to work. It's hard. It's not that fun. It's doing Uber or DoorDash is a lot more fun than working at McDonald's or Wendy's.
Sure.
So it'll be interesting how that plays out with the fast casual, fast food service.
Yeah. And then the second thing that I would ask as it relates to retail with Activate is obviously COVID changed a lot of things because that's more experiential retail, which I think is one of the huge, huge things about retail going forward that has a ton of upside is experiential. I don't know if you would classify it as experiential
for
retail.
Sure. Yep.
How has COVID and whatnot? I'm sure that was very odd, at least in 2020. Has it kind of bounced back?
Yeah, that's Activate. We opened 3 months before COVID started. Sure. And Breakout, we had opened, you know, 5 years before COVID started. And so we were at Breakout, we were already doing games where only you and your friends were in a room together. A lot of the other concepts would combine two different groups into one room. And so we were already doing that, but we saw the industry go to that during COVID so that at least you're only around people that were in what they call it, the COVID pod, so that you could, like, these are the people you're going to spend time with, but you're not exposed to other people. And so we saw, since we had already done that, that helped. But the first 2 months were awful. But it's come back, but we've closed 10 Breakout locations since 2019. But they were kind of mediocre locations before. But COVID did hurt. But I think it's maybe cleaned out a lot. The escape room industry had so many people entering it. In 2014, when we started, there were 24 locations. In 2017, there were 1,850 locations. So whatever exponential that is, 3,000x competitors in the space from 2014 to 17. So it did weed out a lot of competitors that probably weren't doing that great before. And even if someone's doing poorly, it's still taking sales away from you. So that probably helped us, but it also, we had to close 10 locations.
I think that's interesting. And that probably pivots us into real estate in general or commercial real estate in general, because you are a real estate investor and you understand it. But COVID did do that. As you think about different asset types in commercial real estate, like office is one that's like very relatable. Like you could get away with having a crappy traditional office space pre-COVID and people were probably going to still lease it. People went home, changed the way that they operated. And I'm not like a long work from home guy, but I do think that changed the way that people viewed the office, and then everybody had to tighten up after that. I would say that was probably the same thing with some of your all's concepts.
Yeah.
How do you all deal with, and how do you continue to deal with when like a competitor comes into the space that's very similar? Like if they come into a market that you guys might've been on your own, how have you guys traditionally dealt with that?
I mean,
is that a concern?
Yeah, we haven't spent too much time worrying about competitors. It's just hard. There's not a ton you can do about it. And I think one thing we're really excited about with Activate is the barrier to entry is so much higher. With the frozen yogurt and Breakout, a lot of people open those locations, and sometimes at a fifth or a tenth the cost of what we spent. But you throw a website up, a customer can't tell that much from a website what the experience is going to be like.
Pay for some Google reviews.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and overall Google, I think that's where we do set ourselves apart, is how many reviews and good reviews we have. But especially at the beginning, everyone kind of got pretty good reviews.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of competitors enter the space. So we just had to keep in good. Customers that came would come back because they realized it was a good experience. But on initial, it was hard to tell. But with Activate, it's just a lot more investment, a lot more complex, and it's going to be a lot harder to copy.
Sure.
And or to have a direct competitor. But, you know, movie theaters are a competitor to breakout games. It's something fun to do. Netflix is probably, like, the streaming service is probably the biggest competitors, actually. People can stay home and watch a show, and it's easier than going out.
Because you're competing for that Friday, Saturday.
You're competing against for their leisure time.
Yeah.
And so those are probably like the biggest competitors actually for our space. But yeah, we just don't worry too much about competitors. We don't gain that much. We need to work on how do we create great experience for people, good hospitality, investing in our employees. How do we make really good games that are fun, that are solid so they don't break or have failures? And then how do we get people to come back and come again?
Yeah. Well, let's shift into real estate a little heavier, because obviously you guys have had a ton of experience on the tenant side and obviously on the just ownership side as well. What kind of assets are you invested in, and what are you kind of interested in investing in moving forward?
Yeah, I think the real estate personally for me has been sort of a side project. I really enjoy what we're doing with creating concepts, and there's a lot of upside to those. And so I think that's been really fun. And I think real estate, it costs a lot of money to get into. It doesn't have as exponential upside as creating your own concept. Mm. But it definitely has an upside, but it's a little more linear than asymmetric, which is a lot of our investments are asymmetric, where you have a fixed investment and you might lose it all, but it could be have a really high return. And I think real estate, you won't lose it all. It's probably not going to have a crazy high return, but it's going to have a consistent return. So I really like doing that. So we've done some retail, some flex warehouses that we just buy on the side. We're working on a development in Midway right now. That's been kind of fun. It was created in the 1980s, called Midway Station. And so it was going to be like a retail focused area right off I-64. So now it's been converted more into an industrial park. And so we're going to put some units up there, some flex warehouse units. And it's my first time doing that kind of development. So that's been really fun to work with the city. And they've been really great to work with, and work with some architects and GCs, and trying to figure out a kind of a master plan for these lots has been really fun.
Yeah. And I'm sure you can apply a lot of the learnings that you've taken from actually starting concepts and probably apply that to real estate. Like, it sounds like you're taking a kind of a bigger shot in real estate. You're not just buying like an 8-cap office building.
Yeah, I think that's true. It's hard to get excited about that.
Yeah.
And we're investing so much money into our concepts and trying to scale those. So it's not like I have millions of dollars sitting here and trying to get 10% return on that. Well, I'm trying to add value through our skill sets and even just, I mean, some of the stuff that we were talking about earlier, Ross, where how do you take all these different pieces and combine it together to make something that didn't exist before, is something that I really enjoy. Kind of the 0-to-1 effect. I think that's where our value and value that I really enjoy comes from.
That's awesome.
And so I'm trying to do that, you know, in Midway, where it's a raw land, and how you take it from that to something that's usable and functional and that people can enjoy and adds value to other people's business. That challenge is what's exciting.
You said something there too that I really liked, and that is something that I've really watched over the last few years as I've gotten to know you, is you said it's not as exciting. Like an 8-cap office building is not as exciting. So I assume, based off some of our past conversations, that you like to work on things that you're excited about.
Yeah, I think I guess I do. I think that's really important, because there's always this heartache with everything that you do, and you run into walls. And so how do you keep running into walls that have rewards far into the future? I think sometimes wisdom is just trying to see further and further to the future, push out your reward further and further, instead of trying to have a short-term gain. And I think as more we grow, the more we're pushing our rewards out into the future, hoping that, you know, things will get returns in the future. But in this year, next year, the year after that, not worrying too much about what we're going to get from that.
Sure.
But, you know, dealing with trying to get the city and the construction guys and the architects and our vision and the people are going to help us lease the space out all to agree on like what the vision's going to be is hard. And so that kind
of that's the fun part.
No, it is hard, but it's like if you're doing it in something that you don't enjoy, it's like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
But if it's like fun to try to figure that out, that's what makes it fun. That's why like waking up on a Monday or a Saturday where it's like kind of doesn't matter what day you're waking up working on it is fun. Yeah, it seems meaningful if you're doing something you like and is fun, and that helps you push through those hard, frustrating times.
This sounds like it's going to be like the most sexiest flex space ever.
Man, I probably have oversold this. Man, I don't. Yeah. Sometimes we call it sexy flex. Yeah, it will not be super sexy, but it'll be.
So there's not going to be a sign on I-64. I assume that just says sexy flex.
Sexy flex. Call 1-800-SEXY-FLEX.
So another thing that you said there too, it was when talking about like stable investments, like you guys are looking for 10x, 20x, 30x. We have a part of our business at SVN. I guess it's not even associated with SVN. That's Bluegrass Business Advisors. And it is crazy how much more like money, theoretically, rate of return you can make in business. But it's kind of like making a risky investment. You're just kind of investing in yourself.
Yep.
But then real estate is where, and not to be get it confused for the listeners, like real estate is often like a very stable, for the most part, a very stable, long-term, you know, somebody in my office, I can't remember who, told me at one point in life, I think it might have been John, told me at one point that if you buy a bad deal, just wait 30 years and it'll probably be a good deal. The business part of it, you probably don't make it another 30 years. You probably don't own that business for another 30 years at that point. So let's get into a little bit more forward-facing questions as it relates to Lexington, because that has kind of been where you guys, that's been an incubator for you all.
Yep.
What are some pros for people that are listening to starting a business in Lexington, and how has that been a good experience for you guys?
I think Lexington has been a very communal space to work. We think that a lot of times investment, people talk about continuous rate of return and how you need to keep it in the markets and so that it's exponential return. And I think relationships are actually like that. And so that's a big reason why we're still here and why we came back is after growing up here and then now working for 12 years here, the relationship capital just keeps growing and keeps growing wider and keeps growing deeper. And when you have that, I think you can try more difficult, more challenging things that require that relationship capital. And so I think Lexington is really open to that. I think with, you know, the story with Weta helping us with vinaigrette, that's crazy. Like that shouldn't happen. If you go to New York City and approach a chef and ask them to help you start your concept, they won't do it. But I think you have Awesome Inc. and some of these organizations that are really here to help other organizations succeed. So I just see a lot of communal effort. If someone is starting a business and they want to talk about it with me, I'd love to meet with them. And I think it's a lot of people like that. And I think that's rare. I think the, you guys may disagree with me. I don't know. I think the permitting side and like those kind of things in Lexington has been pretty, we've had good experiences with that. That's been, compared to a lot of the other cities, that's been pretty smooth. And I think that can be a big barrier to growth. Even just how long it takes to get something completed in some other cities. If you can cut that in half, you can just allow so many more deals to happen over the course of 10, 20 years.
Sure.
And so I think Lexington's been really great for that, for us.
Do you think to that point that you guys having established roots here helps that process, like in terms of like permitting? Because people get you.
Yeah, I think a little bit. There's probably some credibility and trust that you're not trying to do a sneaky deal or something.
Yeah.
But overall, I don't think we've, you know, we don't do a lot of development. So we're not doing huge development projects. We're doing renovating 2,000 or 6,000 square feet of space. And so they're not huge projects. But I think overall, that's been a great experience for us compared to some other cities that are just really challenging. Yeah, I think it'll be interesting over the next 20 years. I think there hasn't been a lot of company exits where younger folks have like made a bunch of money and want to reinvest back in the community. I think there's some older folks who've been here a long time and added a ton of value have made a good lick, but we haven't seen a tech company really go public or a big event happen where there's a lot of reinvestment that happens in the community. So I think that'll be a really, I hope that in 20 years, there'll be several stories of that. And then those entrepreneurs take that money and start multiple concepts or companies and bring in other talent to the city. So that's what I hope happens in the next 20 years, that we see that happen several times.
Yeah. And I mean, that's part of the reason we're doing this is I think that we are all on the same page that we think that Lexington can get to that point. And there's enough people that really love the city, and there's enough really educated, really bright people here that love the city that really want to make it what they want it to be. So going off of that, what do you think outside of the point you just made, which is actually a really good answer to this question, but what are you most excited for? It can be developments, it can be concepts. What are you most excited for in the future of Lexington right now, kind of as an outro question?
I mean, I love downtown. I think downtown still has a lot of progress to be made. I think it'd be cool if we specifically like shut down a couple streets and made them like more walkable and just made it more of a center place to come and hang out. I think we started to get there before COVID, and I think COVID really hurt downtown. Sure. But there's a lot of cool things, the convention center being done, the park that's coming up. That'll probably be, you know, 4 years or whatever. But that, I think that'll be a great asset to downtown. And I was reading the other day that Kentucky has, like, the most land bordering moving water of the third most of any state in the U.S. or something. Huh. So I think there's some cool things with that, with hydropower could be an interesting play. I think Lexington and then Kentucky figuring out how to use our natural resources is an important element to our future.
Sure.
We're a pretty poor state. During COVID, I was looking at the debt to equity ratio of the different states in the U.S. And so when the U.S. gave out money to states, depending upon your rating, you either got charged interest for that or you didn't. Tennessee did not get charged interest because they're like an A-rated state. Kentucky was like a B or B minus something, so we got charged interest. And we have a worse debt equity than California.
Wow.
And so I think we got to figure out some of that stuff. And I think figuring out natural resources, figuring out how to bring companies in, I think is going to be a really – and those are huge projects to figure out. And I don't know who's going to figure that out.
Maybe you. You might head those up.
I don't know. Governor? I mean, it probably takes like a mix of political and entrepreneur and tons of money to figure these problems out. But I think those are problems that have to be figured out for Kentucky to progress.
Yeah, and thrive.
And thrive, because I think there are other states around us that are figuring those out. But I think Kentucky is a special – it's not Midwest. It's not really Southern. It's Appalachian. That's like who a lot of people in Lexington are from, Appalachia. And I think that's like a very unique culture.
Yeah.
And trying to figure out how to use that culture and use our resources and use our talents. But it's going to be, there's a lot of hard things to figure out.
Yeah. Well, that was a good parting thought. Bryce, we are really thankful that you came on. Again, if you haven't visited any of Bryce's concepts, it's a really cool company that you can get behind, very local, and we're just glad to have you in the community. So thank you for coming on.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.